So what this meant, basically, is that if you look at space and time as that which is being shaped, then you have to consider that gravity is a shaper, or that these tensors, these tension things, are a shaper of space and time. It means that if you have matter present, which tends to act like a field of gravity or a shaper of space and time, then it means that there will be distortions, rips, folds, bends, curves in space and time produced by these stressors, these matter-energy stressors. Just the presence of these inertial things will bend the space and time. To get a picture of what I'm talking about, imagine that you have a plastic sheet, a great long plastic sheet, and imagine that you and your friends, and maybe several friends, are holding it and stretching it out so it's being stretched. And imagine that somebody places a bowling ball in the middle of the plastic sheet. The bowling ball will indent and curve the plastic sheet. So there's an indent where the bowling ball is. Okay? But the plastic sheet, we'll imagine, is the space, time of the universe, let's say. We're just imagining it. We're making a two-dimensional model of what's really a four-dimensional thing, space and time. But just imagine this. And now let's suppose that somebody removes the ball, or suppose that somehow the ball's invisible, but the indentation in the space-time in this plastic sheet remains. If you were to send a ball, let's say a golf ball or a little tiny thing, and you were to push it so that it travels along the plastic sheet, what would happen when it came near the indentation? Well, it would curve around. In fact, if it fell in the indentation, it might go around in a circle, like a water going in a toilet bowl, going around in a circle as it drains down. And so we would see that. And as far as we were concerned, we would say, there must be a gravitating mass which is bending the trajectory of our little ship, our little ball as it goes around, but in actual fact, it's the space-time itself which is bending it around. When you put all this together, this crinkling of space and time, this bending of space and time, the idea of a gravity well, we begin to look at the universe as a kind of funny game. It's all space and time, and wherever there's indentations or wherever there's these fold-ins or whatever you want to call them, even if we didn't see matter, matter would be that which caused that space and time to fold in, or if you will, the space and time that folds in generates the matter. Now, it turns out that if you can take matter and you can squeeze it and squeeze it and squeeze it so it becomes more and more compact, it obviously is going to become denser and denser and denser and denser. It turns out that as the matter becomes denser and denser and denser, the folding, the distorting of the space and time around the matter gets more severe, the denser it gets. There's a certain place that it reaches, there's a certain moment in space and time where if that is squeezed too tightly in, so tight in fact that it gets very compact, the space and time around it gets so distorted and so warped that light itself gets caught by it. And when light gets caught by it and can't escape, we call that object a black hole. So a black hole, because light can't get away from it, that's why it's called black. Because we can't see it. No light can escape from it. Now, there are certain processes that can take place in the area, in the volume, in the little space around the black hole. I won't get into that right now. But I want you to realize that in distorting space and time this way and creating this kind of zone in which light can't escape, we've actually created a way in which time travel could take place if we could somehow figure out a way to utilize this huge distortion. If somebody were to travel from, say, our planet into the nearest black hole, which may be at the center of our galaxy, and we were to watch that trip, as the traveler approached, got closer and closer and closer to that black hole, it would begin to appear as if the traveler was slowing down. In fact, even the light that the traveler was emitting, sending us our signals back to us, at first the light, as he's sending it back, may be blue light. But as he's approaching that zone, that place where the space and time is going to really get very, very distorted, as he gets closer and closer to that, that light begins to get redder and redder and redder, and it goes into the infrared. And if we were to listen to the voice of whatever recording was on that, it would get lower and lower and lower and lower, and it would slow down. And if we kept our eyes on that spaceship and watched it as it came very, very close to this black hole, to this distortion zone around the black hole, as we watched that, it would look like a fly got swatted on top of a sphere. And we could watch for 20 years, and it wouldn't budge. In fact, our children could watch it after we're gone, dead and buried, and it wouldn't budge. And our children's children can watch it after they're dead and buried, and it wouldn't budge, and it wouldn't budge. In fact, a billion years could pass by, and that little spot called the spaceship would appear as if it was stuck to the black hole forever. But if we were inside of that spaceship and traveling along, we would not experience anything like that. It would only take a matter of a few hours, and we would go right into the black hole. It may not be very pleasant to do so, but we'll forget that for a moment. In other words, we're looking at this old thing about the t squared minus x squared formula, the b squared minus a squared formula. We're looking at the difference between proper time and the time spent aboard a moving object. When you move into a gravity well, a compact one like a black hole, time gets so distorted and so improper-like that it doesn't take very much time at all, very short, and yet for us, it would be taking an awful long time. Virtually what we're saying here is as the time traveler approaches that zone, his speed will be increasing, getting closer and closer to the speed of light. And if he were to somehow back out and get back out again, he would emerge in the universe at a much later future. In other words, he could use the black hole as a device in which to time travel. Now, we're going to go a little further with this in the next session, but I just want to give you a little preamp here, a little warm-up to it. When black holes were first looked at, and people were trying to figure out what happens as you go into them, it became clear that, and this is something which is generally true about the general theory of relativity, there are many, many solutions to the equations. It's not just that there's one solution and that's it. There are a lot of different solutions, and some of them are very bizarre, like the black hole solutions. At first, when people found them, they didn't believe them. They didn't think they could be possibly real until they began looking at observations at things going on in the center of our galaxy and other galaxies and came to the conclusion that the central core of every galaxy is a black hole. First, they didn't believe it because they then began to figure out under what circumstances stars in their evolution and their going through their death throes could become compact black holes, and under certain circumstances, they can. When people began to study more what's going on inside of the black hole, they began to realize that there were actually zones inside the black hole, and these zones could be reached depending on how you traveled. It turned out that if you had a black hole which was not rotating, if it was just sitting there, and you moved into the black hole, got through that zone that where everything slowed down for everybody else, and you were inside the black hole, as long as you were traveling at a reasonable speed, you would be doomed to crash into the center of the black hole, which is called its essential singularity. It's a place where no one is allowed to go. Singularities are places where physics doesn't work. We have no formulae. We don't know what's going on. But it's not very pleasant as far as we can tell. But if you could travel faster than light, which you can't, but if you could, then you would find that there was another zone, another place in which you could actually escape the black hole without going to that essential singularity at the center of it. And when you came out, you would emerge into a universe, which is just like ours, with one outstanding exception. Everything in that universe is going backwards in time relative to the universe that we just left. And going a little further into this, if we were able to get this black hole spinning on an axis, then it would be possible to enter it, go into that first entry zone, and even traveling at a normal speed, we could avoid going to the essential core of the black hole, the essential singularity, and we could find ourselves traveling into alternate parallel universes. How many of them? Well, that depends on the shape of the structure of this internal world of the black hole. Some people think it just goes on forever and ever and ever and ever, so there's one universe after another, after another, after another, ad nauseum, ad infinitum. But some people think it may be a curved inner structure, so that as you go from one universe to the next universe to the next universe, you eventually start going in a kind of a circle, so that when you go from one universe to the next universe to the next universe to the next universe, eventually you come back to the universe you left. What's interesting about it is if you choose to make your trip certain ways, you can alternately go from universes where time runs in the same direction as you would say your time is running, into universes where time is going in the opposite direction from the same way that your time is running. These are the solutions to Einstein's remarkable field equations of general relativity. And it is really quite an amazing thing to investigate them.